Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. The Syrian army says it has taken over the entire city of Aleppo. Rebels who had been occupying the eastern part of the city withdrew following a month-long Syrian army offensive. The announcement came hours after the last convoy of residents was reported leaving the city, the last of a week-long evacuation effort. Here is UN Special Advisor Jan Egeland.
This was an operation, the largest that I know of, that took place, and I think it saved a lot of lives. And I think it is. It means that the end of the battle proved to be less cruel than it could have been.
Jan Egeland. Egypt has asked the United Nations to indefinitely postpone a vote on a resolution demanding an end to Israeli settlement building in Palestinian territories. The UN Security Council had scheduled a meeting Thursday to vote on the resolution, which would also declare that existing settlements have no legal validity and are violations of international law. Spokesman John Kirby gave the U.S. State Department's response.
What we've continued to try to do is work towards seeing a viable two-state solution realized. But it wasn't. So in that regard, I think we were interested to see how the debate and discussion would unfold. And I think I'd leave it at that.
John Kirby. A video purportedly showing two captured Turkish soldiers being burned to death was released by the Islamic State group in Syria on Thursday. The site intelligence group, which monitors militant groups online, said the Aleppo province of the Islamic State in Syria released the video showing two army soldiers being taken from a cage and burned alive. This is VOA News. Police in Australia say several people allegedly planning a series of bomb attacks in Melbourne on Christmas Day have been arrested. Victoria Police Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton said the five suspects were self-radicalized and inspired by Islamic State propaganda. He added they had planned to attack high-profile locations in Australia's second-largest city. A new study says heavy usage of social media can lead to depression. Writing in the journal Computers in Human Behavior, researchers from the University of Pittsburgh say the use of multiple platforms is associated with depression and anxiety among young adults. Specifically, researchers found that people who report using between 7 and 11 social media platforms are three times more likely to develop depression and anxiety than those who use between 0 and 2. Researchers said they are not sure why heavy use of social media drives depression and anxiety. For more on that story, go to our website, voanews.com. The United States has won a major trade dispute with Indonesia, scoring a victory for American farmers and ranchers. The World Trade Organization found Thursday that Indonesian trade restrictions break WTO rules. The Obama administration brought 18 separate claims to the disputes panel and won all of them. President-elect Donald Trump has chosen China critic Peter Navarro to head a new White House office on trade. Navarro's selection is being seen by many in China as confirmation that Trump is determined to implement his election promises for putting trade restrictions on Chinese goods. Navarro is a business professor at the University of California, Irvine, who has been a fierce critic of China's trade and economic policies. Donald Trump's staff moved Thursday to clarify a statement made by the president-elect about bolstering American nuclear capabilities. Trump tweeted that the U.S. must greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capabilities until such time as the world, in his words, comes to its senses regarding nuclear weapons. Trump transition spokesman Jason Miller says Trump was talking about the need to keep nuclear weapons away from terrorists and dangerous world leaders. The United Nations Security Council is expected to vote Friday on whether to impose an arms embargo on South Sudan. But diplomats say the U.S.-led measure is expected to fail, despite warnings that the new country is on the verge of genocide. The United States, backed by Britain and France, argued that cutting off an arms flow is urgently needed to prevent atrocities. Russia, China, Japan, Malaysia, and Venezuela, and more importantly, the three African Council members, Angola, Egypt, and Senegal, all expressed reservations about the measure. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Friday, December 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Catholic Church says DRC politicians must reach a political agreement before Christmas Day, Sunday.
La Cinco n'est pas disposée à des prolongements.
Utembe said that the church mediators are not inclined to look favorably on further undue postponements and delaying tactics. He expressed the church's firm wish that a compromise be found before Christmas.
That's viewers William Klaus in Kinshasa. The U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region says the U.S. has decided to impose targeted sanctions on those responsible for violence in the DRC. And Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni makes a surprise visit to South Sudan and calls for an end to insecurity.
I would appeal to the transitional government, headed by the president and all the other stakeholders, to stop all actions involving insecurity so that the people focus on elections as soon as possible.
The wife of South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar says the humanitarian crisis in the country can be blamed on President Salva Kiir's lack of leadership. Computer programs take aim at the high cost of medicine in Nigeria. And we'll take you to a U.S. citizenship ceremony in New York City. Those stories plus something O'Malley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, members of the Presidential Alliance and the country's main opposition coalition met again on Thursday to try to hammer out a deal on delay elections. Mediators from the Catholic Church say the two sides need to reach an agreement before Christmas. But so far, neither side is showing signs of compromise. William Klaus has the latest from Kinshasa.
The Archbishop of Kisangani, Monsignor Marcel Utembe, took a firm line as he reopened the talks in Kinshasa.
La Cinco n'est pas disposée à des prolongements.
Utembe said that the church mediators are not inclined to look favorably on further undue postponements and delaying tactics. He expressed the church's firm wish that a compromise be found before Christmas. Utembe is the president of CENCO, the organization that represents the Congolese Catholic Church, which is mediating the dispute over delayed elections. The talks were suspended on Saturday while a delegation of Congolese bishops visited the Pope to seek guidance on the crisis. During the break at midnight Monday, DRC President Joseph Kabila's elected mandate expired. He intends to remain in office until polls can be held. The leader of the Rassemblement, the country's main opposition coalition, Etienne Tshisekedi, responded by declaring Kabila illegitimate and calling the population to peaceful resistance. Security forces heavily deployed since last week put down sporadic demonstrations that started early Tuesday and continued into Wednesday in Kinshasa and other Congolese cities. Human Rights Watch says security forces have killed 34 people and that it is still verifying additional reports. The police have given a lower toll. A spokesman told reporters Wednesday that 21 civilians have been killed, most by stray bullets or while engaged in looting. The police said one of their officers was also killed. But the Rassemblement has returned to the negotiating table. The Secretary General of Tshisekedi's party, Jean-Marc Kabund, spoke to journalists as the talk resumed. He says, "We have come to find a solution as to the illegitimacy and illegality of Mr. Kabila. We have come to negotiate the departure of Mr. Kabila from power. This is all the population needs to know." The Rassemblement boycotted talks earlier this year that provisionally set the presidential election for April 2018. The Electoral Commission says it needs time to prepare an updated voter roll. Kabila has so far refused to agree to the Rassemblement's demand that he publicly commit to not seeking a third term, which is forbidden by the Constitution. The coordinator of the youth activism group The Fourth Way, Jean-Marie Kalonji, does not see the point of further dialogue. Kalonji told VOA that CENCO must explain to the people why the negotiations are continuing. Because the people of the DRC are turning the page and Kabila is no longer president. He says the dialogue does not make any sense, and that is why the Congolese youth protested on December 19th without the opposition calling for it. Tensions do not look to be abating anytime soon. A police spokesman said that the enhanced security presence will remain in place until the end of the year. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
The U.S. Special Envoy for Africa's Great Lakes region says the United States has decided to impose targeted sanctions on those responsible for violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Tom Perillo described the situation in the DRC as fragile. In this interview with John Linden of VOA's French 2 Africa service, Perillo says he's hopeful a deal can be reached from the current church-sponsored talks.
The situation in the DRC is very fragile right now. Our hopes had been to reach an inclusive agreement ahead of December 19th, the end of President Kabila's constitutional term, because we knew that would enter into a very dangerous and volatile period. We thought it was unfortunate the government blocked both the elections themselves, but also moved towards a compromise deal ahead of time. Now we have dozens dead in the streets and many, many more arrested and detained amidst an already fragile economy. So we continue to believe people must return to the negotiating table under the Catholic bishops and reach a deal as soon as possible.
President Kabila has just appointed a new government. Is that for you a sign that he plans to remain in power?
We want to continue to believe that President Kabila is committed to the constitution he helped bring into existence, and that would mean moving the country as soon as technically possible to national elections in which he will not be able to stand as a candidate based on constitutional term limits. The announcement of that government 5 minutes before midnight on the 19th was not something that expressed a great deal of confidence, and I think everyone continues to hope, again, that all of the key leaders will come together in these negotiations and reach agreement on a path forward.
The U.S. took sanctions against many Congolese officials. What has been the impact?
The United States has decided in this case early on to try to target sanctions not on the country as a whole, but on some of the worst actors who've been most responsible for violence, killings, repression, closing of political space. Up until a couple years ago, the DRC was really one of the models for open political space across the Great Lakes region, and the effort to crack down on that space has been one that has greatly increased tensions as well as, in many cases, the loss of life. So we have taken individual sanctions against some very senior officials. We believe that has helped to deter some of the more violent and lethal actions by the government, and hopefully is helping to drive everyone towards understanding the urgency of a consensus deal.
Are you planning to take any sanctions against Kabila himself?
We have, under the executive order, the ability to pursue sanctions for all of those responsible, and that would include that. We've heard from people on Capitol Hill, both Republicans and Democrats, an interest in looking into the assets of the family, the Kabila family, and certainly the blockbuster report from Bloomberg News last week helped unveil a great deal about the family's assets around the country. But our hope is rather that we can get a consensus deal that allows President Kabila to leave a hero. He has much to be proud of in terms of bringing the country into peace and into constitutional rule of law, and we still hope that his legacy will be one defined by his greatest accomplishments.
What will the U.S. do in case of a failure of the current talks?
Really, we have no choice but to continue to hope for a compromise from all the sides under the bishops. In the last few weeks, we've seen significant compromise and moderation put on the table from the opposition Rassemblement. We've not yet seen those same steps from President Kabila's side, but we've heard some whispers and hopes that perhaps they're ready to make some of the steps necessary to reach an agreement, perhaps even very shortly. The reality is this problem could be solved in less than a couple of hours if the political will exists. And the person with the most power in the country, of course, is the president himself. And we hope that he will step up as a statesman and help save his country from this disintegration.
Tom Perillo is the U.S. Special Envoy for Africa's Great Lakes region. He spoke with John Linden of VOA's French 2 Africa service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 23rd. Let's send shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni made a surprise visit to South Sudan's capital yesterday, where he urged the transitional government of national unity to take concrete steps to immediately end insecurity across the country so that the people will focus on general elections in 2018. Speaking to reporters after a closed-door meeting with President Salva Kiir, Mr. Museveni said the people of South Sudan deserve peace.
They fought for total peace and self-determination, and I would appeal to the transitional government headed by the president and all the other stakeholders to stop all actions involving insecurity so that the people focus on elections as soon as possible. Because that's what the people of South Sudan fought for. And any other issues that needed to be handled in order to have free and fair elections should be handled. That is my prayer for the people of South Sudan, to regain their sovereignty through the vote, because the elections could not be held because of fighting. All fighting should stop so that the people of South Sudan regain their power. Because now they don't have the power. The power is with the people with the guns. Now the people of South Sudan need to regain their power.
That's Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni speaking yesterday after a surprise visit to South Sudan's capital, Juba. For his part, South Sudan President Salva Kiir described Mr. Museveni as a wise man whose advice is welcome.
We are honored by this visit because it gives us energy to move forward and to get advices from him. He has a very rich experience that we can gain from him. We have covered several issues of bilateral importance, and we will take all the advices he has given to me and we will do with it.
The South Sudan President Salva Kiir, meanwhile, fighting continued along the two main highways from Uganda and South Sudan. The South Sudan Army says it was trying to flush out pockets of forces loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar, who fled the country shortly after fighting broke out in July. The wife of former South Sudan First Vice President Riek Machar says the humanitarian crisis in the country can be blamed on President Salva Kiir's lack of leadership. In an interview this Wednesday with VOA's Straight Talk Africa, Angelina Teng says the country's political troubles began in 2005 during the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, when she and other politicians had a difficult time agreeing on a constitution.
The next casualty was actually the political space. So there was no space for dialogue to discuss issues. And when people try to raise this, that we must discuss the future of the country and how we can actually embed it, the aspiration of the people of South Sudan that they fought for so long in our institutional system of governance, then it became an issue. And our president didn't take it lightly. He took offense to when people descended.
Mrs. Machar says the lack of dialogue in the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, a decade ago, is also partly to blame for the country's current state of affairs.
Immediately when we started to discuss our transitional constitution, this is when the disagreements start to surface even within the ruling party, and especially between the president and his vice then. And this is when we were raising issues of concern with regards to the need to restructuring the government institutions that were used to oppress us, to improve on the interim constitution, to institute a system of governance that would devolve power to the people.
Mrs. Machar says South Sudan's founding fathers, including her husband, downplayed issues such as checks and balances during the founding of the country because they did not want to sabotage the process of nation building.
Dr. Riek Machar was the vice president, but I can tell you when we navigated from 2005 up to 2011, we had to navigate very carefully to ensure that actually the referendum is not jeopardized. So within our ruling party, the SPLM, whenever there are issues with regards to internal democracy and what have you and whatnot, we tend to kind of play them down because we do not want to sabotage.
That was Angelina Teng, wife of South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar. She spoke with Shaka Saleh on VOA Straight Talk Africa television program. The prices of medicine in Nigeria are several times higher than in many other countries around the world, according to data from the World Health Organization and the Nigerian government. A group of young computer coders and technologists discover that medicine prices in Nigeria can be 9 times higher than the global average. Chika Odua reports from Abuja.
In Nigeria, pharmacies are feeling the pinch of the country's economic recession. The cost of medicine at this store has gone up 40% in the past 6 months. Fumi Bola Omotayo says she is worried about her customers.
You can see affordability of drugs is actually life. Your health will not know if you can afford the drugs or not.
She says fewer than 5% of her customers have health insurance to help subsidize the cost.
The drugs sold at this store are mostly imported. Public health analysts say less than 30% of medicine available in Nigeria is manufactured locally. Nigeria is facing high inflation, and import tariffs have increased.
I can say it's expensive because of the recession we are in Nigeria.
We realize that the price is actually higher than what we normally, you know, what we used to buy.
But even before the economy slumped this year, medicine prices were relatively high in Nigeria. Studies in 2004 and 2010 by the World Health Organization and the Nigerian government revealed the cost of medicinal drugs in Nigeria is several times higher than the global average. The 2004 study found distributor or retailer markups could be 900% of the manufacturer's price. Today, pharmacists and public health analysts know the pharmaceutical system in Nigeria enables huge profit margins.
Everyone's trying to think of their own self-interest, how they can maximize profit, because there isn't a strong regulation from the government. Because you could go sometimes 400-500 times markups.
The high prices inspired a team of technical experts and computer coders to develop an app to help users learn more about the cost of medicine.
So the tool asks people how much they're paying for medicine, compares it with the World Health Organization data showing what an average person is paying everywhere else in the world. And we display what percentage higher Nigerians are paying.
But pharmacist Onyekachi Mbadiwe is concerned that the app may not provide enough information about what goes into pricing.
I can imagine someone tweeting and saying, oh, I bought paracetamol at 500 times the markup at X pharmacy. They're fraudulent, they're doing all kinds of things, and this will go on social media, and we know how powerful social media can be. So I was just thinking there needs to be something to just support the information that is being given to the client.
For now, Temi Adeoye and his team of coders hope their application will bring the cost issue to the attention of policymakers. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
Nearly 730,000 immigrants from around the world became U.S. citizens in 2015 alone, each with his or her own path to the official ceremony recognizing and celebrating their new status. In this report, VOA's Adam Phillips takes us to a typical citizenship ceremony in New York City.
Please rise for our national anthem.
It's mid-morning in a huge federal office building in downtown Manhattan, and 137 people from 35 countries of origin are standing together listening to what in a few minutes will become their own national anthem, too. Katie DeHasek is a public affairs officer with U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services.
No matter where we have the ceremonies, whether it's just in our office like today or at really inspirational spots like Statue of Liberty, people are always experiencing a whole range of emotions. Feel grateful, feel excited, feel relieved. They're Americans by choice.
Bangladesh, People's Republic of China, Dominican Republic.
There is important symbolism in the citizenship ceremony. While everyone is seated, the master of ceremonies calls out the name of each of the nations represented here today. When citizen candidates hear the name of their own country of origin, they stand up to applause. What mere moments ago had been 37 isolated groups of people becomes one group standing together on the brink of American citizenship. As it says on every American coin, E pluribus unum, out of many, one. The oath of citizenship, sworn with right hands raised, completes the transformation, as we hear in this highly abbreviated montage.
Repeat after me. I hereby declare on oath that I will support and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I'll bear true faith and allegiance to the same, So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
To top it off, President Obama personally welcomes the assembly into the national family by video. Here is an edited excerpt.
It's an honor and a privilege to call you a fellow citizen of the United States of America. This is now officially your country, your home to protect, to defend, and to serve through active and engaged citizenship. Together, we are a nation united not by any one culture or ethnicity or ideology, but by the principles of opportunity, equality, and liberty that are enshrined in our founding documents.
Soon, the personalized official certificates of citizenship are conferred, and these brand new citizens are free to take souvenir selfies with their friends and families in front of the American flag. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with football news, and in South Africa, where the South African Football Association will in the next few weeks start searching for a new Bafana Bafana coach. This follows the dismissal of Sheikh Mashaba as senior men's national coach earlier on Thursday. Coach Mashaba was suspended last month pending an internal SAFA disciplinary hearing. SAFA CEO Dennis Umbele said a disciplinary committee found Mashaba guilty of several offences following his public outburst aimed at the association president Danny Jordan and guests directly after the 2-1 victory over Senegal on November the 12th. Now to the CAF Awards, where Borussia Dortmund and Gabon star Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is still in line to retain his African Player of the Year crown after making the final round of a 3-man shortlist on Thursday. The 27-year-old French-born forward will go up against Leicester City and Algerian winger Riyad Mahrez and Liverpool and Senegal winger Sadio Mane for the prize. Mohamed Salah of Roma and Egypt and Islam Slimani of Leicester and Algeria both failed to make the final list, having made it into the final five nominees. The winners will be unveiled at a ceremony on Thursday, January the 5th in Abuja, Nigeria. There have been no changes in the top order of African football in the latest football rankings for December released by the World Football Governing Body, FIFA. Senegal's Teranga Lions are still the top team on the continent, with the Elephants of Cote d'Ivoire second. Tunisia, Egypt and Algeria have all retained their places among the top five. Rwanda's Amavubi was December's best mover, gaining 9 places. Super Eagles have dropped one spot and now occupy the 51st position, while they are 8th in the continental ranking. In the global ranking, Argentina will close out the year as the best-ranked team after retaining top spot. They have had a good year, with the only low point being the penalty loss to Chile in the final of the Copa America football competition. Brazil lies second, Germany are third, while Chile and Belgium are fifth. West Ham United Senegalese striker Diafra Sakho has been ruled out for up to 8 weeks because of an ongoing back injury and will miss next month's African Cup of Nations. The 26-year-old has played just 127 minutes of football this season due to the back problem and the thigh injury he sustained at Manchester United last month. Manager Slaven Bilic said on Thursday that the striker was not close to a return. In women's football, Super Falcons forward Francesca Odega has signed for Australian Women's Top League Westfield W League club Sydney FC for the remainder of the 2016-2017 season. Francesca Odega's signing was confirmed on the club's official website on Thursday. The football player, who joins Sydney FC from Washington Spirits in the United States of America, is the first African to play in the Westfield W League. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Over to you, James, in Washington. And Merry Christmas to Daybreak Africa sports fans.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And also, Merry Christmas to you. That's it for this Friday, December 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone a very good weekend and a very Merry Christmas to all of you.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.